It's the web's only podcast completely devoted to daily fantasy sports. Welcome to the Roto-Grinders Daily Fantasy Fix. Here's your host, Dan Bach.
Hey folks, what is up? Thank you so much for listening to the podcast. Of course, this is the Roto-Grinders Daily Fantasy Fix, all presented by Daily Joust. I am Dan Bach. You might know me a little bit better as DB730. If you see me out and about in Daily Fantasy sites and chat boxes or wherever, make sure you go and say hi. Certainly appreciate any feedback you guys may have on the podcast. So you can certainly say something to me in the chat room. Certainly love to hear back from you. Today on the podcast, we're going to kind of obviously talk about Major League Baseball. Got about 15 games. All night games today. Kind of a weird week, you know, lots of two-game series going on. So normally we have more day games, but we got a full slate of night games. So that means lots of baseball discussion, some great analysis as usual. And I'm actually starting to heat up on Draft Street, you know, perfect timing. Of course, we've got our big Draft Street promos tonight. Of course, I'm talking about that $5 tournament to get the one of the five 109 qualifying spots. Of course, if you didn't get in on this tournament, I hate to say this, but oh, sucks to be you. But we are going to probably do something like this again down the road, whether it's with Draft Street or somebody else, we will see. But nonetheless, the response was enormous. The tournament filled 220 people in maybe like 2 or 3 hours. It was pretty quick. And that's what happens when you provide great value, as like we say, over $500, almost $550 in overlay in this tournament. And hopefully one of these grinders who gets into that 109Q, hopefully yours truly, can take that down and have a place in the top 40 finals over there on Draft Street with their Draft Street Baseball Championship. So thanks again to Mark and the guys over there for letting us put this on. I think it's going to be great. But that takes place tonight. Game starts at 6:30 tonight instead of 7 o'clock, so make sure you get your teams in. A lot of you probably went and got your three lineups, didn't even get them set, just make sure you got your spot. So that was the best way to go about doing it. So make sure you go over there and play that tonight. One thing I want to talk about, and I mentioned this yesterday in the podcast, I'm going to kind of just start here with something unrelated to baseball, because obviously we're in the middle of baseball, we got some NBA playoff action going. But ultimately, the biggest sport for fantasy is fantasy football. There's no question about it. Now, from a daily perspective, the sites, there's some debate about it. I don't know the numbers, but I think NBA might actually do better than baseball. I'm not 100% certain of that one. And I'm talking about in terms of cash being spent on it. Because let's face it, with baseball and NBA, you've got games pretty much every night of the week. So I don't know what the breakdown is with those compared to football. Nonetheless, though, football is a cash cow everywhere. And daily fantasy, weekly fantasy football is huge. It's growing. And it's even kind of leaking over to the college game, which, again, if you're new to this industry, if you're new to the podcast, that was something I had a ton of success with last year. And to be honest with you, I think it's a more skill-based game than anything out there because of the enormous player pool you have. And with Daily Joust and Draft Street, Profanity Sports all having college football. There was some, you know, whispers that FanDuel was going to pick it up as well this season. So there's, you know, to me that's a great game, and people are always looking for advantages from a skill standpoint. I think you're going to see a lot of it there. But the thing that I want to do today, and I'm planting seeds here because it's probably right around that time where these daily sites are going to be beginning to look for their plans for football season. Not that, you know, there's tons left to go here in baseball. Football doesn't start till September. But if you're going to make any wholesale changes to your game with the development schedule and the process, sometimes you've got to start these things early. So here's the thing that I want to do today. I want to just talk about the one thing that drives me crazy. And if you are a site owner, please listen to this. Do not let this fall on deaf ears. And I'd love to hear your thoughts on this in terms of why you wouldn't agree with me. But the one thing that drives me crazy is kickers in fantasy football, especially from a daily perspective, a weekly perspective. To me, there makes no sense in adding the kicking element to fantasy football. It's absolutely ridiculous. And for me, you've got to get rid of it. I mean, I applaud a site like Draft Street that just ignores them altogether, because to me, kickers are so unpredictable. There is absolutely zero skill in picking them. And I don't want to hear about, oh, well, you know, if they're a good offensive team, they're going to have more chances at making more field goals and extra points. Well, maybe true, but if you're a crappy team and you can't score touchdowns, you can end up with four or five field goals. So there's no rhyme or reason to it. And who really wants their idiot kicker to really be the deciding factor when you got sometimes hundreds or thousands of dollars on the line? To me, it's the most frustrating position to have to deal with every single week, and there's no good reason to keep it. There's none whatsoever, especially because here's the thing. What you do is you take out the kicking position and you add a flex position and make it a running back, tight end, wide receiver. To me, every single site should do this. End of story. And I'll tell you why. Because if you're a site owner or somebody who runs one of these daily sites, how often have you had people look at you and say, man, kickers suck. You know, I hate taking kickers. Okay, so let's answer. Look at that question. Now, it's going to be debatable what the answer is, but I'm sure that there are a decent number of people who are in the same shoes as me who hate the kicking position. Now, if you took the kickers away and gave people an opportunity to pick another position player, to add a new element of skill, another player for them to choose, to get rid of overlap, how many people do you think would go to you as a site owner and say, bring back the kickers? I miss the kickers. I love picking Ryan Longwell and Mason Crosby and Lawrence Tynes every single week. I mean, who would rather pick one of those jamokes than go and try to find the sleeper wide receiver or the sleeper tight end or the backup running back who's going to get extra carries that week? To me, there is zero good reason to include kickers. And I don't want to hear this crap about it's part of the game. Screw that it's part of the game. That doesn't matter. It's totally unpredictable. Relief pitchers are a part of the game. I don't see every site adding relief pitchers to their baseball. I mean, that's the one thing where, you know, I applaud Draft Street for kickers. I kind of get a little frustrated with relief pitching because to me it's the same boat. You can't predict it. You cannot predict which relief pitcher is going to go in, because even if you think a team might have an edge, might end up winning the game, there's no way to know whether or not they're going to be in a save situation or not. To me, get rid of it altogether. So these are the things that drive me crazy, and this is the number one out of all the changes that can be made. Personally, I'd love to get rid of kickers altogether across every format of fantasy football, whether it's season-long or certainly the weekly game, which we all play. But please, if you're listening to me, get rid of the kicker and just add an extra utility spot. That's all you need to do. Just add one extra utility spot that can go anywhere, because kickers do not make any difference. Defenses, on the other side, I think they bring a lot to the table. I think there is strategy in going that route. But kickers, screw them. They suck. They're no fun. And I guarantee you, I mean, I could almost be willing to bet anything that Mark over at Draft Street could email me and tell me that, listen, I had maybe zero requests for kickers this season. Because I just can't imagine people would be clamoring for that. So to me, make the game better for the players, and not having to deal with that crappy position that's totally unpredictable is the best way to go about doing it. So I'm praying to you, if you listen to this podcast, people at FanDuel, people at Joust, people at Draft Day, please just get rid of them altogether. That's your best bet. Okay, next thing I want to rant about is, actually, it's not even a rant. It's just our analysis. It's Major League Baseball. So let's go ahead and hit that up, because we've got tons of games today, and I'm out here to help you become a winner. So let's do it.
Relax. All right, don't try to strike everybody out. Strikeouts are boring. Besides that, they're fascist. Throw some ground ball. More democratic.
Very busy night tonight in Major League Baseball. Let's kick it off with Boston and Tampa Bay. Buchholz against Hellickson. Buchholz sitting there with an ERA of 8.31 on the season. Opponents still have the highest opponent batting average against out of any pitcher in baseball. And he does have the highest ERA as well for all qualifying pitchers. Boston, though, has outscored opponents 34-8 over its five consecutive victories, allowing only three runs over the last four in those wins. So they're just kind of starting to get it together. Buchholz, he's 3-0, 2.84 ERA in his last four against the Rays. And he's actually done pretty well, 3-0 in his last four starts at Tropicana Field. BJ Upton, the one guy with pretty good numbers against Buchholz, 5-for-11 with a homer, might consider him. As for Jeremy Hellickson, he hasn't allowed more than three runs in a start since facing Boston last month. Ryan Sweeney, he's one guy who really likes hitting in the Trop, 342 hitter in his career. As for a couple of guys on Boston who has done well against Hellickson, David Ortiz, he's 6-for-13 off of Helly. Hellboy, Pedroia, Adrian Gonzalez, Jared Saltamacchia, all those guys all do have home runs off of Hellickson, so it'll be interesting to see how this game goes down. Los Angeles Dodgers versus San Diego. This is that 6:30 game, so make sure you get your lineups in for this one. It's Capuano against Clayton Richard. LA has won 16 of their last 19 against San Diego, including a 7-3 record at Petco Park. Chris Capuano been really good this year. Won four straight starts behind an ERA of .65 and struck out 24 at about 27 and two-thirds innings. Also holding opponents to a 167 batting average. Hasn't been great in Petco, 0-2, 7.53 ERA, but the bottom line is San Diego, not a very potent hitting team. Clayton Richard, he's 5-1, 2.63 ERA in his nine career starts against the Dodgers, winning all three decisions at home with an ERA under 2 in those five starts. He's 0-5 with a 6.32 ERA in his last six overall, so he's definitely not in a great groove right now. Andre Ethier has a 357 batting average, six home runs, 26 ribbies in the last 24 games against San Diego, but he's only 3-for-21 against Clayton Richard, so I'd probably avoid him tonight. Juan Uribe, 9-for-24, two homers. Never a fun guy to take, but he's got the numbers in his favor. And A.J. Ellis, 3-for-6, and he's been surprisingly good this year for the Dodgers. Seattle and Cleveland, King Felix against Ubaldo Jimenez, and of course King Felix got roughed up a little bit by the Yankees in his last start, but Seattle has actually scored two runs or fewer in their last in five of its last six games, so not expecting a whole lot of offensive fireworks, I guess, in this one, because let's face it, Felix, he is really, really good against Cleveland. That's right, struck out a season-high 12 and eight scoreless innings on April 19th. Didn't get the decision in that one, but he is 2-0 with a .82 ERA in his last three starts against the Tribe. Shin-Soo Chu is batting .302 in his last 13 games, also had a homer and a double last night. And Johnny Damon, 11-for-22 with a homer and four doubles off of Hernandez. Who knows when that happened? It might have happened like a decade ago, so I think I'd ignore him. But Jack Hanahan, for whatever reason, he's not a great hitter, but he is against Felix Hernandez, 8-for-12, two homers in his career. As for Ubaldo Jimenez, well, he's going to be going against a Mariners team who's batting .233, one of the worst in the American League, and actually have lost four of... have lost 10 out of its last 11 road games. So I think there's a lot of reasons to maybe consider Ubaldo Jimenez here. He's coming off his worst outing of the season, gave up seven runs, walked five and four and a third innings, and a 7-5 loss to Boston. But there's not a whole lot of batter versus pitcher stats in this one. As long as Jimenez keeps the ball in the strike zone, he should do okay, because there's just not many guys in that lineup who can do a whole lot of damage. Pittsburgh, Washington, it's Eric Bedard against Gio Gonzalez. Washington has won every time Gonzalez has started in the nation's capital. He's gone seven innings in each home outing, surrendering a run for the first time in a 7-1 victory over Philadelphia on May the 5th. Opponents only hitting .114 against Gonzalez, who leads the major with almost 11 strikeouts per nine innings. The Pirates, on the other hand, scored two runs or fewer in exactly half of their games. The only guy really worth considering is Andrew McCutchen, batting .500 with four home runs and a pretty good OPS during a 13-game hitting streak against the Nats. As for Eric Bedard, posted a 1.35 earned run average and striking out 30 and 20 innings versus the Nats in his career. The right-handers are only hitting hitting .299 off of Bedard, while lefties a very pedestrian 2-for-25, 9 Ks. So I think I'd avoid Bryce Harper today. Washington hitting .208 against left-handers altogether, the second worst mark in the National League. Adam LaRoche has been pretty good against his former team. 7 for 23 home runs in his last six games against against the Pirates. New York and Toronto, Hiroki Kuroda, Kyle Drabek, those are the guys facing off. Kuroda, 2-2 with a 2.52 ERA over his last four starts, but not so good on the road with an ERA over 4 in losing all three of his road starts this season. Kelly Johnson, the one guy with some experience against Kuroda back to their National League days, he is 4 for 11 against him. Also, Toronto losers of three straight and 7 out of 10. Blue Jays probably find it difficult to get back on track because Kyle Drabek's just in a slump. 5.06 ERA during a career-worst four-start losing streak. He's 0-2 with an ERA close to 8 in his three starts against the Yankees. Got bombed the last time against them. Look to Mark Teixeira to kind of continue his better hitting as of late. 3-for-7 with a homer off of Kyle Drabek. Miami and Atlanta, Burley against Minor. Miami has been outscored 81-50 and dropping 15 of 21 in this series against the Braves dating back to September of 2010. But Miami has gone 11-3 in May. They're turning things around. Big reason for that is their rotation. Their starters, 6-2, 2.55 ERA this month so far. And Burley, he's recorded quality starts in all but one of his seven outings. Dan Uggla, 4 home runs, drove in 10 runs in 9 home games against his former team a year ago. As for Mike Minor, good prospect, but he's been slumping here. Surrendered 21 runs, all earned, and 7 home runs over his last 16 innings, during which opponents are batting .377 against him. Minor compiled an ugly 6.46 ERA in 3 starts against the Marlins last season, thanks in large part to 4 home runs, 2 of which came from Giancarlo Stanton, as he is 2-for-2 in his career with a couple of bombs. Hanram also with a home run, and Logan Morrison, 3-for-5, a double, triple, and homer against Mike Minor. So look to the fish to have a good outing today. Cincinnati and New York, it's Mike Leake against Mr. Santana, and Santana is 4-0 with a 3.16 ERA and his 6 career starts against the Reds. Reds have hit .186 with runners in scoring position while dropping 4-of-7. They've also been held to three runs or fewer in 6 of those contests. Johan Santana, though, he's holding left-handed hitters to a .114 average this year with 12 strikeouts, so probably avoid a guy like Jay Bruce in this one. Joey Votto, .366 overall, 10 homers in his last 19 games against the Mets, but doesn't hit very well in Flushing, only 2-for-18. Look to maybe Brandon Phillips, 5-for-19, 2 doubles and a triple off of Santana. Good cheaper option as he hasn't had a great season thus far. As for Mike Leake, he's 0-1 with a 2.19 ERA in 2 starts against the Mets. He's a pretty horrible pitcher, but the Mets are not a dynamic hitting team. David Wright is good, though. .369, 3 homers, 11 RBI in his last 15 games against Cincinnati. Also, Daniel Murphy batting .419 with 5 doubles, driving in 9 runs in his 10 career games against the Reds, also in the middle of an 11-game hit streak. Oakland and Texas, Tom Malone versus Yu Darvish. Darvish leads the Rangers in wins and strikeouts, his ERA the lowest out of anyone in that rotation, and he's going against an A's team that's last in the majors with a .217 average with their 298 strikeouts among one of the most in the league. The Rangers went 13-6 against Oakland last year, winning 12 of the last 14, holding the A's to a .185 batting average at the plate. They've hit .161 with 28 strikeouts while dropping 2 of their last 3. That's Oakland, so not a whole lot going for them. They've also given Tom Malone 19 runs of support in his last 2 outings, but I wouldn't certainly expect that today against Yu Darvish. Jamal Weeks, one guy who enjoyed going against the Rangers a year ago, .340 in his 12 games against the Rangers last season. As for Malone, he's 3-0 with a .39 ERA at home. Unfortunately for him, this game is in Texas. And on the road, we're talking about an ERA close to 8. And no batter versus pitcher stats for either pitcher in this game. So kind of just a guess on how everything's going to go. But the bottom line is, Texas likely to have a little bit more success in this one than I think Oakland will. So don't hesitate to take those guys. Philadelphia and Chicago, Kyle Kendrick against Matt Garza. Kendrick has gone 0-2, 6.43 ERA in his three starts this season, and he's also 0-1, but a pretty decent ERA, 1.80 against the Cubs in three career appearances. Brian LaHare, he went 7-for-15 with a homer and four doubles in their four-game series earlier this season. And Joe Mather, only one at-bat against Kyle Kendrick, but does have a homer, so pretty cheap, possibly high upside option there. As for Garza, he has really done well against Philadelphia. Struck out a season-high 10 batters, yielded one hit over seven scoreless innings in his last start against Philly in April. Garza also improved to 2-1 with an ERA under one in four career regular season starts against Philly, and he's had a lot of success against guys in this lineup. Jimmy Rollins, 2-for-14. Placido Polanco, 2-for-14. Shane Victorino, 1-for-11. So it's always tough to go with a Cubs pitcher, especially on sites like FanDuel and Joust that award so much for wins. But, boy, Garza looks like a good option tonight. Minnesota and Detroit, Blackburn versus Porcello. You combine these guys as the ERA, we're looking something in the 12s right here. Minnesota looks to avoid 15th loss in 18 contests at Comerica Park. Justin Morneau coming off the DL, hitting .347, five homers in his last 24 games against Detroit. But Minnesota's starting pitching staff has just been awful. They're one of the worst, 6.38 ERA, by far the worst in baseball for a rotation. And Nick Blackburn's not helping the cause. 0-3, an ERA close to 10 in his last four appearances. Three of those were starts against the Tigers. So load up on your Tigers. Miguel Cabrera, .448 batting average, three homers against Blackburn. Alex Avila, 4-for-11 with a homer. Austin Jackson, 6-for-15, three doubles. So you can't go wrong taking Tigers today. As for Rick Porcello, 5-1, 2.61 ERA in his last six starts against Minnesota. Denard Span has done well against him, 8-for-22. But when you hold down Joe Mauer to 3-for-17, you're doing something right. And Porcello has had his number so far in his career. Milwaukee and Houston. Houston is 2-7 in their last nine, with two victories, only coming by one run apiece. And the Brewers, though, only 4-11 at their last eight or last 15 road games, did have a win against New York yesterday. Bud Norris earned one of those wins for Houston on Friday by giving up three hits over six innings, also matching a season high with eight Ks in Pittsburgh. Norris, though, 0-3, 10.13 ERA in his last three matchups versus the Brewers. Not good. Ricky Weeks, is this going to get the ball rolling for him? He was in an 0-for-21 skid, had a solo homer last night, also I think struck out three times. Aramis Ramirez extended his hit streak to 12 games, and he is 5-for-11 with two home runs in his career against Norris, also batting .400 in his last 17 games against the Astros, so good option at third base today. Randy Wolf, he is 5-0 with a 1.32 ERA in his last seven against Houston. He surrendered one run in each of his last two outings in Minute Maid Park. The only guy with any decent numbers against him is Jose Altuve, 3-for-6 off of Randy Wolf. Moving on, Baltimore and Kansas City, Tommy Hunter against Felipe Paulino. Kansas City really starting to pick it up. They're entering this game with a season-high four straight wins and 12 in their last 18 contests, played really well against Texas. Baltimore, on the other hand, they've been a good road team this year, 11-5 on the road. Felipe Paulino makes his third start this season for KC. Was good versus the Yankees, not so good against the White Sox. J.J. Hardy is red hot, though, for Baltimore. 4.09, 5 homers, 9 RBIs in his last 10 games. He is 3-for-5 in his career off of Paulino. Adam Jones also having a great year, 18-for-50 during an 11-game hit streak against the Royals. Tommy Hunter, he's been roughed up for 9 runs, 13 hits, and 2 outings this month. He's 0-1 with an ERA about 9.5 in his 3 road starts, giving up 7 home runs in 16 frames. So I think taking some Kansas City Royals here is not a bad idea. I had Mike Moustakas last night. He came through for me with a homer, and he's batting .369 during his last 22 games. And not much, again, in the way of batter versus pitcher stats in this one, but I think the Royals taking a bunch of those guys might not be a bad play against Tommy Hunter, who just is not that good. Arizona and Colorado, Patrick Corbin, Jamie Moyer. The over-under in Vegas is at 10.5, so think we could see some runs in this one. Arizona 3-10 over its last 13. Colorado has dropped 9-10 before beating San Francisco 5-4 on Tuesday. Moyer is 0-1, 6.43 ERA in his last four outings, and has an 8.40 ERA in his last three. He's done well in his last three games against the Diamondbacks, 3-0, 0.92 ERA, but he hasn't faced them since 2009, so the team has changed quite a bit since then. Aaron Hill loves Jamie Moyer, 4.23 batting average, three home runs against him in his career. As for Patrick Corbin, the 22-year-old left-hander gave up a solo homer, two singles, over seven innings in Friday's 5-1 win over San Francisco. Corbin split his first two starts, posted an ERA of about seven. Colorado is batting 282 and scoring 6.5 runs per game at home. Troy Tulowitzki didn't miss any time after getting hit in the leg on the foul ball the other day. Did have a couple of hits. He's, unfortunately, though, 4-for-37 against lefties this year. Awful stats for Tulo. Tyler Colvin, though, pretty good. 4.67 off of left-handers, so if he's in the lineup, look to him. Michael Kadire, 3.44 against left-handed pitching. Chicago and L.A., I'm talking about the White Sox and the Angels. Pujols, 8-for-25 since his average dropped to 190 on May 8th. I think he is going to come around. 3-for-4 yesterday. The Angels endured a major league worst, 8 shutouts already this season. 134 runs are one of the fewest in the American League. But we'll see how Gavin Floyd does. The right-hander's 2-0, 1.27 ERA, and his last three starts pitched a season-high 7 2/3 innings and a 5-0 win over Kansas City on Friday. Floyd, though, 1-2 ERA of about 6 in his last three against the Angels. White Sox also 2-for-6 in their last 8 against Anaheim. Mike Trout starting to really get it together. He put up some dynamic numbers at AA, AAA, and the last week or so, he has been doing the same thing at the big league level. Love Mike Trout. Brings a lot to the table. Had a homer last night. Colaspo, 7-for-21 off of Floyd. Vernon Wells, 7-for-18 with a homer as well. Even Meiser is Turris, hitting 370 off of Gavin Floyd. As for Jerome Williams, he's 3-0 with a 2.15 ERA in his last four starts. And get these numbers, 6-0, 2.30 ERA with a whip under 1 in his career at Angel Stadium. The only guy with any luck against him, Adam Dunn, always a good chance for a homer, actually has one against Williams, is 6-for-13 against him in his career. Last game to talk about tonight, St. Louis and San Francisco. A couple of lefties, Jaime Garcia against Madison Bumgarner. And Bumgarner's a chance to become just the fourth pitcher in team history to win 9 consecutive home starts since the Giants moved to San Francisco. He's got an ERA of 1, struck out 53 in 54 innings over the last 8 at home, and he's 5-0, 1.54 ERA versus everyone this season not named Arizona. So when he doesn't play the Diamondbacks, he does really well. Carlos Beltran, 360, 6 homers in his last 6 starts, but he sat out the last 2 games. No word yet on his status for today. Since the start of 2011, though, Alan Craig hitting 333 versus left-handed pitching. Of his 27 hits, 17 have gone for extra bases, including 7 home runs. So with a lefty on the mound today, even though he's a good one, Alan Craig not a terrible option. Jaime Garcia, though, his ERA has not been good lately. 7.71 over 2 starts in May, yielded 5 runs, 9 hits over 5 2/3 on Friday. 9-7 loss to Atlanta. He's 1-1 with a 1.29 ERA over 3 starts against the Giants, limiting them to an average of 194. Lots of zeros, though, on the board for Giants players against Garcia. But the thing to consider, look at the righty versus lefty matchups. Grigor Blanco, Buster Posey, Melky Cabrera, all very solid against lefties this year, hitting over 344. And in his only appearance last season, Garcia struck out a career-high 9 over 6 innings. But he's not pitching the ball all that well right now on the road. I think San Francisco might be able to get to him in this one. So that's the rundown of Major League Baseball today. Best of luck. Let me tell you a little bit about my friends over there at Daily Joust. Just announced yesterday, they've got a brand new kind of promotion going. It's called the All-Star Joust, and it's going to include basically like $1,500 in cash and 2 tickets to the MLB All-Star Game in Kansas City on the line. And what do you have to do to qualify for these? Well, you just have to play in some $1 and $2 tournaments. That's right. If you win one of their Page Thomas Daily MLB tournaments or their Squire Williams tournament, those are their $1 and $2 large field tournaments, then you can get an entry into the All-Star Joust and take a chance at possibly going to the All-Star game and obviously getting involved in that big tournament. So that's going to take place. The game's going to take place on July 10th. Looks like it's going to be June 22nd is the date of the MLB All-Star Joust. You can get 3 seats per person into this tournament. Again, just got to play some $1 and $2 level games, and you can get that. They've been putting bounty badges on people. Last time it was Primetime 420. He kind of bucked the trend a little bit, finished 32nd out of, 110 people. So who did they bring in? Well, one of the biggest dogs in the industry, Beer Makers Fan, is this week's bounty badge participant. You beat him, then you get yourself an extra badge, and of course those badges go towards a monthly free roll where if you get, I think it's 5 badges per month, you can play in that $250 free roll. So make sure you check that out. Also offering these King Richard 50-50 contests, which I absolutely love, that spanned over a couple of days. So the only site you're finding that is at Daily Joust. So make sure you go over there, check them out. A terrific sponsor of the podcast. Certainly appreciate it. They are dailyjoust.com. And with that, folks, I'm going to say goodbye to you for today. We will return tomorrow. Please follow us on Twitter, at RotoGrinders. You can also go to our Facebook page and go to iTunes and subscribe to this podcast. It'll be there for you each and every day. Best of luck again, as always, in your matchups. It's the RotoGrinders Daily Fantasy Fix presented by Daily Joust. And we'll talk to you again tomorrow. See you, folks. Money.